You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, and welcome to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio program. It is Saturday evening, August the 16th, and we've taken our show on the road tonight, and we're in Nashville, Tennessee at the 2014 Annual Council of Conservative Citizens Conference. Now, the conference proper just wrapped up a little more than an hour ago, so a lot of our, and it was a sold-out room today. I didn't see very many empty seats at all. It was a packed venue. And most of those people are still getting dinner right now, but they are beginning to trickle in, and we're going to have a pretty rowdy crowd, I hope, here in just a few minutes' time. I mean, there's a few out there right now, but we're going to start making a lot of noise in here as soon as everybody gets their checks. But before we get to that, before we get to the fun part of the show, I'm going to let Keith talk. Now, actually, this is big news for Political Cesspool fans because Keith Alexander has been on a brief hiatus here for about the last month, four or five shows, I guess it's been. And so Keith returns to the Political Cesspool while we're doing the live remote broadcast tonight. So I want to give Keith Alexander a very hearty welcome back to the show that he has co-hosted with me for so many years. Keith, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back, and it's great to be here in Nashville at the Council of Conservative Citizens Convention, annual convention.
Well, I'm glad that we were able to welcome you back to the show after, you know, you've never missed more than a week or two at any given stretch over the course of the last, I guess, 6 or 7 years, however long you've been co-hosting with us. You were out for a brief period to tend to some work and some other business, and you're back tonight. And just tell the folks what they've missed had they not, if they weren't here in Nashville over the course of the last 2 days. What have they missed? They're tuning in tonight from sitting in this room with us. What have they been deprived of, Keith?
They've missed some very bright people commenting on the signature issues of the Council of Conservative Citizens. And I have one sitting next to me right now, Gene Andrews, who is a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and he has a particular interest and expertise in General Forrest. In General Forrest and in the Fort Pillow Massacre. He gave a presentation today, which was excellent, and he's going to share that with our radio audience here in just a moment.
Well, that's right, and Gene was by no means the only star of the speaker's docket today. We had an excellent panel on how to deal with the media, which is, of course, one of the signature issues of our owner of Liberty News Radio Network, Sam Bushman, and he would have been right at home with this. And anyway, it was just a great event. It was a great fellowship all the way around. It's always to come up here and take part in the CFCC conference. We've been doing it, I guess, for 8 years. I think 2006 was my first time, and together we've never missed one. I think I was that last year, but you were there in our stead, Keith. So anyway, it's good to be here with good people, and we wish that everybody listening tonight across the Liberty News Radio Network and the AM/FM affiliate stations that carry the Political Cesspool in select markets across the country, of course, our flagship station in Memphis, Tennessee, and of course, everyone tuning in on the internet tonight. I will expect us to have a larger than normal internet audience and audience that will be listening to us after the fact in the broadcast archive. So it's going to be a great show tonight. We're just getting things started by setting the table, letting you know exactly where we are and what we've been doing for the last couple of days. But as the program proceeds tonight, we're going to be talking to some of the folks who made hay here behind the podium over the course of the last 48 hours. And we're going to be spending an extensive amount of time in the second hour talking about Ferguson, Missouri. And I think everybody listening to this show, and certainly everyone gathered here today, knows what has been going on in Ferguson, Missouri. Diversity is our greatest strength, and it has manifested itself again near St. Louis. And we're going to be talking about that extensively, and not just talking about it. We're going to be talking about it with a gentleman, a good friend of ours, who is a regular contributor to the Political Cesspool, Matt the Copperhead. Matt the Copperhead is a man that traverses this great country of ours. He was in Washington, D.C. with Political Cesspool correspondent Scoop Stanton a couple of weeks ago. He was in Ferguson, Missouri since then, and now he's with us tonight in Nashville, and he's going to be logging an in-person eyewitness account of what he saw in Ferguson at the top of the second hour. And then we're going to be welcoming on Brad Griffin, one of the true heroes of our people. He is the editor and proprietor of OccidentalDissent.com, and Brad's going to be talking with us more about Ferguson. Ferguson going to be the main topic of interest in the second hour. And we're also going to be talking about a recent rally that was that took place in Oxford, Mississippi, that involved the Confederate flag. We're going to hear what happened on the streets of Oxford there near the campus of Ole Miss. And then in the third hour, we're really going to have a hodgepodge, a parade of celebrity guests, if you will, people who have really been making things happen for our people and our movement over the course of many years, and in some cases, many decades, not to get the measuring tape out and start to put it to the tooth of some of these folks. But there have been people here that have done a good job for a lot longer than I have, to say the least. And we're going to be hearing from person after person after person in the third hour. So it's going to be sort of a rapid-fire segment. We're bringing a lot of different faces and a lot of different voices to the radio, and we're looking forward to doing all of that and more before the sand falls from the hourglass and 9 o'clock strikes here in the central time zone. At that point, Keith is going to turn into a pumpkin again, and the show's going to be over for tonight. But a lot's going to happen between now. It's currently, 6:14 here in Nashville. And between now and 9 o'clock, we are going to have a lot of fun. And I promise you, more and more people are coming into the room. In just a few minutes here, we're just going to have Keith, tell them what we're going to have.
Well, we're going to have what we typically have when we go to the Council of Conservative Citizens Convention, which is a rousing good time with a lot of really good people. And you're going to hear insights and observations hitting you pell-mell from every direction, and we're really looking forward to this. Hope you are, too. We'll be back to talk. Well, we're not ready to go yet. We're not ready to go yet. I heard some music here.
Well, Keith's headsets are really good, as you can tell, so he can hear that music. But, no, nevertheless, I was going to say, well, we're always ready to go to a commercial break in live radio, that's for sure, to get a drink and take a breath. You're getting it. We'll be there by the time I finish collecting my thoughts after that, I'm sure. But when we come back, our first guest for tonight's barn burner will be Gene Andrews, who gave the talk on Fort Pillow and Nathan Bedford Forrest today, which I thought, and I'm a little biased being a Memphis native and, you know, having such an affinity for Nathan Bedford Forrest, but I enjoyed it the most of just about anything I heard this week. And we're going to be talking to Gene, who was, in fact, as you and I are as well, Keith, a good friend of Bill Rowland, our dearly departed brother Bill Rowland. Gene Andrews was a close friend of Bill's, and in fact, the last time I broadcasted live from this room, we did it from right over there. That's where the setup was, and Bill Rowland was here for that last live remote, and it was still, I think that was year before last, and that is still to this day was one of the most fun shows we've ever had. It was just a party from start to finish, and we're going to get that atmosphere kicked up, and we're going to let you hear what we're talking about when we get back after this first break. But, folks, you're in for a lot of fun tonight. I sent it out and put it up on the website that we were going to have a rowdy broadcast tonight, and I'm going to trust the people in this room to not let me down and not make a liar of me. And so when we come back, I'm going to let them practice during the commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to see if we can get a few rebel yells here in this conference room in Nashville here on Music Valley Drive near Opryland. And I was talking to a fellow listener of the show last night, and we were reminiscing about the history of the political cesspool, and it actually all started in the summer of 2004. Our first show was in the fall, of course, of 2004, October. But the history of the show started in the summer of 2004 when I was right across.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the political cesspool. Now, I've been really broadcasting the fact that we've got a lovely crowd here. Now, don't make a liar out of me. Do we got a lovely crowd? They had stage fright that first segment, ladies and gentlemen, and so we just had to give them a minute to get warmed up. But they are here, and there's a lot more people here than there was 10 minutes ago, and there'll be a lot more people than this 10 minutes from now. But it's great to be here in Nashville, and now that we've gotten all those introductions out of the way, setting the table in that first segment, let's welcome our first guest of the day, Mr. Gene Andrews. And Gene, I'll let you give the formal introduction of yourself, if you will. I know you're, of course, your history with the SCV, but make it clear for the audience listening around the world tonight.
Thank you very much, James and Keith. We want to welcome you all to Nashville. Glad you could be here with us in Muzak City. And we've had a great time here at the Council of Conservative Citizens Convention in Nashville. Had a lot of great speakers today with the present company here speaking on the microphone excluded. We did have some good ones here today. But I was born and raised in Nashville, lived here most of my life, and taught history in high school. And always had an interest in Southern history, especially Confederate history, and especially General Nathan Bedford Forrest. He's always been one of my heroes, as he has been to many people in the South, and he's been much maligned by the politically correct. And so our presentation this morning was to try to correct some of that misinformation that's out there about General Forrest, and we explain what actually happened at the Battle of Fort Pillow on April the 12th, 1864.
Fort Pillow, of course, is one of the things that they used to malign Forrest's legacy and reputation with the most. And I guess you spoke for maybe an hour, approximately an hour, give or take. It was a PowerPoint presentation. It had slides and figures and maps, and it was just absolutely riveting and captivating the entire time from start to finish. It was just you were glued to it, to the things that were said. Of course, I take a personal interest in this because of my affection for Forrest. But let's talk a little bit about Fort Pillow. Of course, the people today, his jurors in the establishment media, know that Forrest did wrong there. And that's interesting that they know more than the people who actually tried him for that back in the day. And in fact, as you mentioned in your talk, General Sherman had said that he would bankrupt the Treasury of the United States and offer how many lives in exchange for Forrest? 10,000 lives for Forrest. Well, when Forrest stood trial for Fort Pillow, he was found not guilty. So it's interesting that his greatest enemies in life, the people that he fought against on the battlefield, who would have spared no expense or amount of blood to see him done wrong, found him not guilty. But now, of course, he is found guilty in the court of public opinion. Talk a little bit about Fort Pillow, what really happened. You gave an hour talk. We have about 5 minutes left in this segment, a little more than that. It's going to be hard to pare it down, but there was so much you talked about in that speech. So if you could just give us a cursory review of the high points.
We'll be glad to do that. I entitled my talk, Forrest's Second Raid into West Tennessee, and that was it. There was no intent to go to Fort Pillow. And that didn't come up. He left Mississippi on March the 1st, got back on April the 15th. And the first 4 weeks of the raid, there was no mention of Fort Pillow. He was going there to get horses to remount General Buford's dismounted cavalry division. He went to Fort Pillow because of the people in West Tennessee. They asked him to do something about the war criminals that were in Fort Pillow and coming out and robbing, murdering, and looting the people in West Tennessee. And so it was the civilians in West Tennessee that begged Forrest to do something about Fort Pillow. And he protected the civilians of the South. That's why he went there. And the war propaganda that was generated by the U.S. government after this battle was used to stir up anti-South hatred in the North and recruit increase recruiting for the U.S. Army that was lagging behind in recruiting at this time period.
So essentially the soldiers for the Union, many of them, as you called them, Tennessee Tories, they were Southerners fighting for the Union, and they were engaging in raids amongst the townspeople of that area in western Tennessee, looting, raping, pillaging. The citizens of the South implored Forrest to come and help them, and he went there as a soldier and dealt with them honorably by the standards of military code, I guess you would say. His opposition at Fort Pillow wasn't nearly as upfront and honest, were they?
No, they weren't. Forrest offered them a chance to surrender. He had the fort surrounded. He had the high ground. The original commanding officer had been killed. And even by federal standards, the command shifted to an officer that was totally incompetent. They had no combat experience. They thought they were going to be able to defend an untenable position. And like we said, Forrest gave them the chance to surrender, and they didn't do it. And they even taunted the Confederates during this truce when they were trying to talk them into surrendering. Forrest's men came over the wall. There was high casualties because they were caught out in the open after the Confederates came over the earthen walls of the fort. And they were jumped, some of them, over a bluff. A lot of them were killed doing that. They were being attacked by three sides by the Confederates pinned up against the Mississippi River. And, of course, casualties were high.
This is Keith Alexander, Gene. Give us the numbers about how many were killed on the Union side versus how many were killed on the Confederate side. How many of the Union soldiers were black? How many were white? How many were killed? How many were wounded?
The federal strength at Fort Pillow was about 295 white soldiers, about 260 USCTs, United States Colored Troops. Casualties after the battle was over were about equal between the two. By the U.S. Navy account, and the Confederate account only varied about three or four at each breakdown of this, casualties were about 221 killed. Forrest took out 206 prisoners. So if he ordered a massacre, he didn't do a very good job of it. There were another 130 U.S. soldiers that were too severely wounded to be moved. They were left behind, and Confederates actually helped load them on a steamboat the next day and sent them down to Memphis. So this myth about a massacre ordered by General Forrest is a total fabrication. On the Confederate side, there were 14 killed and 86 wounded.
Give us a chronology, if you would, about how the battle at Fort Pillow occurred, how, you know, what maneuvers, what actions were taken by the Confederates, what counteractions were taken by the Union forces.
The Confederates are coming over from Brownsville on the night of April the 11th. They marched all night. They hit the outskirts of Fort Pillow at daylight on April the 12th. They got there so fast and the attack was so furious, they drove in the pickets. They couldn't even man the outer works. Federal soldiers were driven back to the inner works, which was a semicircle about 120 yards in circumference around the bluff of the Mississippi River. The Confederates, from that time on, maintained the high ground that surrounded the fort. They could shoot down into the fort, pick off anybody that stuck their head up over the earthen wall of the fort. And that's when Forrest, in that afternoon, about 3 o'clock, sent in the demand for surrender. And he was refused. 4 o'clock, the bugle sounded, and the attack came forward.
it's really a disservice to the scholarly presentation you gave to ask you to give us a synopsis in the short amount of time afforded to us by commercial radio. But I will tell you, I believe we got it on tape today. I'm not 100% sure if we got it on audio or video, but if there's any way possible we can link to your entire presentation at thepoliticalcesspool.org, we will certainly make that available to everyone out there. But basically, what we've established here, what certainly anyone who has done any research into it at all knows, there was the real history of what happened at Fort Pillow, and then there's what you read about that had happened at Fort Pillow. It was war propaganda. The United States won that war, and the winners, of course, write the history, and so that's what has been passed down to us. But anyway, folks, I wish I could articulate. I would need a vocabulary greater than my own to really put into words how good Gene Andrews' presentation was. But and I know it was equally well received by everyone out there. Do we have any Confederates in the crowd today? Well, I would say we do. I think so. Certainly think so. Gene, a final word about Forrest that you could impart upon our listening audience.
Greatest military officer in United States military history. He was an absolute genius. Dr. Lonnie Manis up at UT Martin wrote a book, Forrest the Untutored Genius, probably one of the best descriptions of Forrest. And his tactics are still studied in military colleges all over the world today.
All right, and I know we will be back with more momentarily here on the Political Cesspool Radio program. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We're here in Nashville, Tennessee at the Council of Conservative Senate. Now.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. We are live and on the air from our remote broadcast location this evening in Nashville, Tennessee. We got a sold-out crowd tonight, and before I ask them to identify themselves, I want to let them know that we have a true hero on the line right now, a true truth-teller who made his debut appearance on the Political Cesspool about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it is former news reporter Sean Bergen, and everyone here is familiar with the story of Sean Bergen, and I know Sean is listening. Are there any fans of Sean Bergen in the room tonight? All right, so everybody knows that we are in the right place this evening. Scoop, are you there with us? Peter Scoop Stanton, are you with me?
Yes, I am, and is there any fans of Scoop Stanton out there? All I hear is a tumbleweed.
All right, let's find out. Are there any fans of Peter Scoop Stanton out here? Not quite as many as Sean Bergen, but there are some fans of Scoop. Hey. No, Scoop, seriously, hey. I want you to give a proper introduction to Sean before we continue with this interview.
Say again?
I'd like for you to give a proper introduction of Sean Bergen, if you can.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was too busy trying to figure out who was booing me in the audience, but... Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Sean Bergen. He's been a part-time actor. He's been on News 12, Long Island, News 12, New Jersey, and he's now the interim co-host of the Anthony Cumia podcast. And on top of that, he tells the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Sean Bergen.
Oh, my goodness. With an introduction like that, I don't know. I hope I don't disappoint. It sounds like you've got quite the zoo crew going on back there at the political cesspool, James.
Well, we don't have quite as much fun as you had with Anthony Cumia a couple of days ago, but we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, it's kind of a wild scene over there at the compound. There's no question.
All right, well, let's get down to meat and potatoes now because time is short, and we've got a patchwork thing here to accommodate a call-in guest from a live remote. I mean, we're not quite that advanced here in the TPC. But, Sean, we're about to switch our attention here to the rioting in Ferguson. And as a newsman, as a professional, how bad did the media screw up on this one?
Well, you know, the media, by and large, runs the same pattern that they always run, right? They love a good race riot, and they love to take something that maybe isn't even a racial incident and turn it into one, right? And then they love to give all their attention to these professional agitators, the race hustlers like Al Sharpton, who roll into town. They pour gasoline all over the situation, and then just before he strikes the match, he turns to his pals in the liberal media who hand him a platform and a megaphone. And they really, the only reason that guys like Sharpton exist is because of the news media. He doesn't bring anything to the table. He doesn't create anything other than ill will. I don't know that he's ever really helped anybody out. But, you know, the media look at a situation like this and they say, wow, this is a story that has legs. We can get a lot of mileage out of this. You've got, riots in the streets, and, they jump to their same conclusions. Their first impulse is to hold the police to an impossible standard and then crucify them when they fail to meet those standards. That's the basic MO of the liberal news media. And true to form, they were right there doing what they always do here in Ferguson, as they did with the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, as they did with the Duke Lacrosse case, as they did with the Tawana Brawley case. You know, it's just them running their usual pattern. They have a story, they have a narrative,
They have a template that they've already laid down, and then they just fall into their usual script.
Sean, it's amazing to hear your answer, because we had a panel here in Nashville today at this conference, and it dealt with the media. And one of the speakers said word for word that the media has their narrative written in advance, and they just plug in the details of any given story, and that's how it goes. And it seems though this was the case again. Obviously, this sainted 18-year-old, because he was unarmed, to be an unarmed black teenager means you are a saint. And that was the narrative. The police officer was obviously guilty, regardless of the facts. And as more and more facts mount in this case, it looks as though, obviously, the initial report, or the way it was skewed and biased to begin with, there's more to it than meets the eye. But they're sticking to their story, regardless of the character of this of the deceased, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, they can't break out of it. It's almost like you're dealing with people who have, you know, an advanced case of a personality disorder, where in the face of overwhelming evidence that their way of doing things is flat wrong, they still continue. They still persist in the same kind of behavior. It's almost like a kind of insanity, you know. Clearly, this guy was no choir boy. They will run, you know, the high school graduation picture, in spite of the fact that there's at least a dozen other photos of this guy, you know, flashing gang signs, holding a gun in his hand with cash in his mouth. And, you know, they completely ignore that, and they want to paint this guy as a choir boy. And then, lo and behold, what happens is the surveillance video comes out. Nobody expected this. That shows this hulking thug of a guy, you know, who steals a box of cigars and then physically manhandles the store owner and then comes back to, like, intimidate him with his size. It's clear to me that this guy was pretty well practiced at that. That wasn't the first time he had done something like that. And so when the myth starts to blow up in the media's face, then they're going to do whatever they can to kind of justify, rationalize, tap dance around the issue. They also do a marvelous job, especially very early on in these situations, in going, right, remember we saw all the interviews with this eyewitness, who we now know was an accomplice to the robbery, this 22-year-old thug with, tattoos up to his chin. And he's given an inordinate amount of airtime to go out and spin what looks now to be like a complete and utter lie about what happened, during that shooting. We're starting to get some details now from people who say they know the police officer, and they're starting to leak information that that is pointing to the fact that, you know, perhaps this was a justified shooting. But we don't have all the details. There is a rush to judgment. The media has their mind made up in advance, as does every other player out there, whether it's the agitators, the people on the street, you know, these race hustlers like Sharpton. They all have a role to play, and they all go along with the script as it was written.
Well, that's certainly the case, and it's good to know that there are people out there. And I wanted to get your opinion on this story, because we are going to be spending a significant amount of time out there, to get a professional reporter's opinion on how the media reported on this story, which has obviously now been declared a national, state of emergency in Missouri. The rioting continues nearly a week later. And again, folks, so we're going to be talking about this extensively as the show goes on tonight, but I want to work Peter Scoop Stanton in. Scoop Stanton has really, really delivered for the political cesspool in the last month, bringing Sean Bergen and Anthony Cumia to the table, among others, Charlie LaDuff, Fox News. Scoop, this is your baby. You ask, get a question in here if you can.
Okay, Sean. Now, when a young black male dies at the hand of police, either justified, unjustified, circumstantial, suspicious, why is it that, is it common practice for, to say that this, the victim, so-called victim of police brutality was always an achiever? He's always about to start college, he's about to start a job, he loved his kids, but it turns out he's nothing but an absolute thug. Is that common in the media, too?
Well, yeah, it goes back to the point that I was made earlier, where they do this with cops, they do this quite often with our soldiers in combat, and they also do it with conservatives. They hold them to an impossible standard, and then they crucify them when they fail to meet those standards. Now, they painted this kid as a very sympathetic figure, And they were able to take full advantage of this because the police in a situation like this are really unable to respond. They're in the midst of a very heavy investigation. Now, I will say this. Ferguson, Missouri was probably not on many people's maps before this all happened. This is a tiny, you know, town of only about 21,000 people. The police in this situation, I think, are completely overwhelmed. You know, when you have riots in a major city like Los Angeles, or you know, that magnitude, it's possible to isolate yourself from it. When you live in a place like Ferguson, everybody there is affected and impacted when, you know, businesses are being burned to the ground and, you know, looting is going on. I mean, it's just anarchy and outright chaos. That really takes a place like Ferguson and turns it on its head. So, you know, the police were pretty overwhelmed, I would say. And I think the media takes full advantage of that. The police can't comment, so they will flood the airwaves with the activists, with these so-called eyewitnesses who, you know, in the end turn out to be liars.
All right, you know, Sean, that's the music. We got to go to a break. Could you hold on for another segment, sir?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do one more segment. Let's hear it one more time here right now for Sean Bergen.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells. But as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rain fly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip two Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to tonight's live remote broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I am your host, James Edwards. We're in Nashville, Tennessee tonight with a packed audience in front of us. It's a packed house, and they're not just political cesspool fans. They're not just fans of the truth. They are certainly increasingly fans of the one and only Sean Bergen. And Sean, before we get back to the interview itself, there's a certain someone here with whom we both share a mutual acquaintance. He wants to say hello to you.
How's it going, Sean? How's my brother in truth doing? It's Matt the Copperhead.
That's got to be none other than the Copperhead, Matt Thulak.
Yes, indeed. We're keeping it real, as they say, and getting the truth out.
Right on.
Handing you back over to James.
All right, well, Scoop, I'll let you take it from there, my friend. It's hard to concentrate on a serious interview, and this is obviously a serious subject matter when you're trying to have a party, and you got people in here with, increasingly providing themselves with liquid courage and so on and so forth. Certainly not the hosting staff, but we're having fun tonight, but we're trying to talk about a serious issue with a very serious guest. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, Scoop, for the next question, if I can.
Okay, Sean, back to the illustrious media. Now, the media released the name of the officer involved in the shooting. Was that a good idea or not? And why does the media always throw the cop's name under the bus?
I don't think it was a good idea when you consider that the officer was receiving death threats. You know, I mean, if the guy got killed, then would they be complicit in murder? I don't think they really hold themselves to the same standards that they hold everybody else. And I don't think that they properly think through the consequences of their actions. I will say, having been in many newsrooms, that the first impulse usually, I've seen how the sausage is made. And whenever there's any kind of a situation like this, the first impulse of these guys is to go right at the cops. How do the cops screw up? How do we get the cops? How do we hold the cops responsible? Cops, 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 cops. I think it was a really bad idea to put the officer's name out there. I don't really see how that advances the story. I didn't really see how there was anything good that was going to come of that.
Right. And now back to the police. You've been dealing with some of the toughest, hardest nails, greatest law enforcement agencies in the world, such as Newark PD, New York City PD, Bergen County PD. Now, the original police presence included the Special Operations Unit to deal with the protesters. You think that was wise to have all these guys in their hats and bats and their Ninja Turtle outfits, or do you think they should have been out with the light blue jackets like NYPD Community Policing Unit?
Oh, no. I'm a big fan of the show of force. I'm a military veteran. When you have a town like that, Ferguson, that is experiencing violence and looting and burning of buildings, that's a situation that has spiraled out of control. You bring out the big guns when you have that. I'm not a big fan of touchy-feely police policy. We had that here in New York City back in the 1970s, and it was a complete disaster. So I think that at that situation, at that time, for that moment, bringing out the guys in the riot gear and the body armor and the Kevlar helmets, I think is a real show of force. They reverted back to the hug it out kind of police policy. And what happened? We had rioting again and the burning of buildings again. And I will say this: I think it's very noteworthy that the only businesses that did not get burned to the ground were the ones where the owners stood outside with their own firearms and protected their businesses. Even with all of that police presence out there, the police were not able to protect those businesses that were burned and looted. And I think it really speaks to our Second Amendment rights in this country and how important they are in times like this.
Right. Just remember, folks.
Sean, let me ask you this:
count, the police are minutes away. Now, the new commanding officer for the police presence happens to be a black captain with the Missouri Highway Patrol. Do you think this is just to put a black face at the head of the police, or do you think this guy is qualified to handle the situation in Ferguson?
It's not really for me to say, speak to the man's qualifications. I think with all that was happening, it was probably a good idea to put a black law enforcement leader out there. He did seem to kind of quell, the violence and the riots.
temporarily. But ultimately, even that approach proved to be a failure. So, you know, I can't really criticize the governor for wanting to put him in there. It seems to me that the Ferguson police themselves were overwhelmed by what was going on there. And I think they really did bow to political pressure somewhat in removing the St. Louis County Police and the guys in the riot here. So it doesn't really seem like any approach has been successful out there. Ultimately, this looks like a compact or trash can fire that's just going to have to burn itself out.
Sean, look into your oracle and tell us how this plays out.
Say that again.
I was saying, look into the oracle, look into your crystal ball and tell us how you see this playing out. Obviously, it's only escalated over the course of a week. It's gotten worse, not better. The media will sink its teeth into this as they did with the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman scenario until it plays itself out. Justice was served as far as I'm concerned, in that particular case, and they had to dissipate. But do you see something here, something that they will force feed and ramrod down our throats until the last full measure? Will this continue to be a national story until the inevitable trial is over? Before.
The public has seen this movie before. We've seen how it plays out. And as the facts emerge and the truth comes out, then, you know, the Sharptons of the world look like ridiculous. The media and their narrative completely falls apart. They can't justify it any longer. The information is slowly dripping out. We have the video of the guy, Mike Brown turns out now to be a real thug. I think more eyewitnesses are coming forward now and corroborating the police officer's version of events and that the guy was coming at him and running at him. Look, here's the fact of the matter. When you're a police officer, you got a gun on your belt, and a guy knocks you out in the street, you're dead. That guy can do whatever he wants to you. He can take your gun off your belt and he can shoot you dead. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. I saw it in Jersey City 3 or 4 weeks ago where a security guard was knocked out, punched out by some guy, and the guy took his gun off his belt and then went out and executed a cop. And he was lucky that he only executed one.
Sean, the guy was unarmed when he was committing the crime, so therefore he was innocent, correct?
No, he wasn't innocent, correct. He was a big, hulking mass of a man who assaulted the police officer inside the squad car, according to the police version of events. They said that one shot was fired off inside the car. He may have, you know, worked his way back, but there's an eyewitness who has emerged now who said that the guy was turned back and running back in the direction of the officer. And if he was running back in the direction of the officer, you know, and that officer feared for his life, then it would appear to me that perhaps, you know, that there's a possibility that his use of force may have been justified. But again, we don't have all the facts yet. But as they start to play out, as they start to come in, I think this thing will dissipate the way the other stories have, if it turns out that the officer's version of events is correct, is the right one.
Well, certainly common sense and truth and the media's interpretation of our laws aren't always consistent, but I want to thank you for providing a dose of common sense for the last two segments here. I'm going to give one more round of applause. Ask for one more round of applause, everybody, from the truth-telling Sean Bergen. Yeah!
James, you make me want to get
and
on a flight to
Scoop
Nashville.
Stanton. thank you, guys. Hey, Sean, we really had a good time. We wish you were here in person.
I'm going to make it a point to come down there at some point, maybe for the 10-year anniversary, James.
You got it, my friend, and thanks to Scoop for putting it all together, and we will talk to you all again soon. Scoop Stanton and Sean Bergen calling in tonight, and, of course, Matt the Copperhead, who will still be with us here as we head into the second hour and talk more about the issue in Ferguson, Missouri. And we'll be talking about it now as we keep things in-house henceforth here on the radio program tonight. For the remaining 2 hours of tonight's live broadcast, we will be pulling from the crowd different persons of interest before we're all said and done this evening. Matt the Copperhead will be on deck at the top of the next hour, and he, of course, was there in Ferguson. So we're going to have an eyewitness, not to the to the shooting, not to the rioting, but he was there in the very early days after this event went down. He's going to tell us what he saw, who he saw, the questions he asked, and we're really going to get into the meats and potatoes of the facts here. We were talking with, of course, Sean Bergen of News 12 up in the New York, New Jersey area, or I should say formerly News 12 reporter until he told the truth. And we were getting his take on it, assuming that everyone knew the facts to begin with. Well, we're going to lay out the facts of exactly what happened in Ferguson. I guess we're going to do things backwards tonight. We got the expert opinion in before we laid down the case, just under the assumption that everybody would know the story. And I'm sure everyone in this room tonight does know the story because we're dealing with people who follow the news and take seriously their civic duty to be informed about these issues. And, of course, we have a lot of people, or at least a significant percentage of people tonight in this room from Missouri. So we'll be talking about that and laying out all the facts when we come back. Keith, I know you were sitting here. We were doing a patchwork thing. It kind of looked like a comedy routine trying to make it work here for the purpose of the live broadcast. Do you have any thoughts on this story before we could take a quick commercial break?